हरि ओ
The position of the Acharya. They call that Brahmana who initiates his pupil and teaches him the Veda along together with the Kalpa and the Rahasyas, the preceptor, Acharya, of the latter. Riti. Kalpa is the practical application and rituals that are based on the Samhita. The Rahasyas are the secret portions of the Vedas, which are metaphysics in Vedanta. The following verses from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antyalila 20, 144, 146. May be quoted to show that the preceptor who personally teaches one transcendental knowledge is afforded special respect. Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Sri Yukta Nityananda, Sri Advaita Acharya, Sri Gaura Bhaktivinoda, Sri Swarupa, Sri Rupa, Sri Sanatan, Sri Guru, Sri Raghunatha, Sri Jiva Charan, Nija Shire Dhari E Shavara Charan, Jaha Hoite Hoya Shava Vanchita Puran. So that my desires may be fulfilled, I place the lotus feet of these personalities on my head. Lord Sri Chaitanya Prabhu with Lord Nityananda, Advaitacharya and their devotees, as well as Sri Swarup Damodar Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatan Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, who is my spiritual master, and Sri Jiva Goswami. Purport. Sri Raghunath Das Goswami was the instructing spiritual master of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami and is therefore been described as Sri Guru. So here is Acharya means as the one who is teaching. He's the initiation element, but he is teaching how to practically apply it and what is the philosophical significance. Right? How to apply that philosophy into your life. That's what makes, because otherwise, yeah, we'll get into all that. So that's what makes the Acharya, right? It may be a popular word or not because of, you know, political concerns, but fortunately, philosophy and the culture of Krishna consciousness is not based on politics. So, therefore, the term simply means that's what he does. He teaches by example, like that. So, he knows that, he practices that, he teaches you, right? So that's the point. But for he, who for his living teaches a portion only of the Veda, or also the Angas of the Veda, is called the sub-teacher, Upadhyaya. Right? So then you have the Acharya, and then the sub-teacher. Then that means he teaches a particular portion of the Veda, only a particular aspect, like he only teaches ritual, or only teaches the Samhita, or only teaches, you know, but he won't be teaching Rahasya. Right? Or he teaches an Anga of the Vedas, like grammar, or Jyotish, or vocabulary, something like that. He'll teach a portion of the Veda. Right? Nyaya, like this. Riti. The Angas of the Veda include Sanskrit, astronomy, astrology, and ritual. Srila Prabhupada quotes this verse, his purport to Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antyalila 20, 147. Shabara Charana Kripa Guru Upadhyayi Moravani Shishyatare Bahuta Nachai. The mercy of the lotus feet is my spiritual master. My words are their disciples, who I may dance in various ways. Purport. Upadhyayi or Upadhyaya refers to one who teaches when approached. Upetya Ari Yate Asmat. in the Manusamhita is said, Eka desham tu vedasya vedang ganyapi va puna yo jadhyapati vrityartam upadhyaya sa uchite. One who teaches others a part of the Vedas or literature supplementary to the Vedas may be called upadhyaya. Upadhyaya also refers to one who teaches art. Let's say someone is a music teacher, that's upadhyaya. So anything that is a body of knowledge, but you're not connecting it to the actual philosophy and its practical application with that philosophy is called an upadhyaya. Right? So that means also that could include your English teacher or, you know, like that. It's an art. Right? So nowadays in your modern schools, they're all upadhyayas at best. Right? You're not going beyond it. Because acharya means what that means in connection with the Lord. Right? So that we would say that's the preacher. Right? Does that make sense? So it's interesting. Prabhupada's quoting this particular verse. Right? So that's if you wanted to know, that's the Sanskrit for this verse. If we were just really dying to know, so that's it. That brahmana who performs in accordance with the rules of the Veda, the rites, the Garbhadana conception rite, and so forth, and gives food to the child is called the guru, the venerable one. Vritti, giving food to the child refers to the performance of the anaprasana, right? Right? So this basically means he's the guru. So he's a family priest, he does like that. So he's the guru in the family. Right? He takes care of all these elements. He who, being duly chosen for the purpose, performs sacrifices for another man is called as officiating priest. Right? So when you have something that needs to be done, you call the person. They are the priest for that time, and then after, they're not. Right? So they're guru, but they're guru only at that time. So during that time, you follow the direction. They tell what to do, how to take part in that ritual. But their direction is limited to the particular ritual being done. Right? But during that time, you have to do what they say, like the guru gives direction. Right? Does that make sense? Like Shukracharya is giving direction, so Bali Maya's fault. He's the acharya of that sacrifice. Right? Does that make sense? But he's not the acharya, meaning he's teaching the spiritual. That's why he could give up the lower for the higher. So you understand there's a hierarchy here.
Maharaj, once you mentioned that by following the Vedas, you might come to a point where you meet someone.
Yes, this means this would be like here, or the family guru, or so it means you have a teacher and he's teaching. You go to him to teach you the one thing, but he knows these other things, but you haven't asked, but he happens to know. So you might find. So, but it's not the most direct approach, because you're leaving it up to chance that it might happen, because you don't know it should. You know what I'm saying? If you know transcendence is what you're looking for, you look for someone who can teach you that. But you don't. You think karma or jnana or yoga is you know, the goal. But in dealing with these three, you might meet a Vaishnava who will tell you what's beyond actually transcendence. So it's not that you know it's there, because if you know, you'll look. Like that. So that's why it's not considered that efficient.
Yes. Would that be where this term rithvik comes from?
Yeah, the fourth one's rithvik. Okay. It just means he performs, means you're performing the ritual, but he does it on your behalf. Because let's say you want to do something, but you don't know how to do it. Right? But so he'll do it for you. That's what rithvik means. It means he does it on your behalf. Like that. But the yajaman is there. You know what I'm saying? So you're authorizing and he's doing it on your behalf. So his idea is that you're going to be the rithvik for somebody who's not there, and someone else will authorize that. How does that work? You know, it's just like I authorize having a party at your house when you're out on vacation. You know, and I could say, well, he likes parties. You know what I'm saying? So that won't work. So to say that Ritwik meaning that you're going to be a disciple of Srila Prabhupada even though Prabhupada's already left. By what method? By the Vedic, it's only for a ritual. Right? So it didn't, the ritual, it says here, the Agnyadeya, the Pakayagyas, and the Shrauta sacrifice, it says Agnistoma. It didn't say Upanayana. that than is the previous one. The rites, the Garbhadan, so forth, gives food to the child. That, he's the family, like Gargacharya did the Upanayana ceremony and all these different rites for Krishna. Right? So he is the guru on this, that the third one that they're talking about. But he's present. You can't take initiation with someone who's not present. And if they want to crow, you know, our acharyas, the nitya siddhas, knock me out, go for it. Then just, all you have to do is, we'll agree, just show us that you're also a nitya siddha. Go ahead. Hey, but if you're not, then don't quote like that. You know, that's kind of stupid. It means no one's died yet from your cooking of Maggi noodles, but then you say, well, this, you know, top chef, he did like this. Yeah, but you can't even hardly boil water without burning it. You know, it's like, so that doesn't work like that. You know, but they also will take things out of context. The point is, who's present is who's there. Prabhupada's the founder, Acharya. So everyone's following his instructions anyway. It's the instruction that's important. So what have they done? They've tried to turn it into a diksha pranali, a diksha line, which is what the caste Goswamis and all the Upasampradayas do. So all they are is there are you know, our first, you know, bona fide Upasampradaya. You know, our own ISKCON Upasampradaya. Because none of the other Sampradayas will accept it. You know, no Hindu system will. Nobody accepts it. You know, even the bogus ones. Even the Upasampradayas won't accept that you can take initiation or someone who's not there. Because why Prabhupada? Why not Bhaktivinoda Thakur? You know, or why not Rupa Goswami? Or hey, you know, cut out all the just Brahma. You know, it's like I'll take initiative for Brahma. You know, so you know what I'm saying? So where does it stop? No, it only Prabhupada. Why only Prabhupada? Where does this philosophy that you're talking about say that it's only for Prabhupada? You know what I'm saying? So it's complete mental concoction. All it is that Prabhupada's not here, so there's no one to tell you what to do. So therefore, and the person who is there, he authorizes, he trains, he does everything, then he says you're initiated by Prabhupada. He's actually the guru. So all Ritvik disciples are the disciple of the person who gave the initiation ceremonies. That's all. And he gets the karma and everything like that. You know, and so now they have a bona fide upper sampradaya guru. You understand? It doesn't fit, because you've just went through the four kinds of recognized gurus. And it doesn't fit into any one of those four. Mm. Right? So this is all there is. So this fourth one is what's called the Ritvik. You know, or if you say that when Prabhupada was still here, then he authorized 11 devotees to initiate on his behalf. He was still present. But he said when he leaves, they're disciples. Right? Means who was initiated while he was present would all be Prabhupada's disciples, even though the other person arranged the ceremony and everything like that. They authorize it, they're automatically Prabhupada's of that. But after Prabhupada's departure, then those same persons would continue the same process, but they would be their disciples. Ramanuja also did the same thing. But he had 74. But 2 years before he left, he established them because he wanted to see that they're doing it properly. And so when he was satisfied they're doing it properly, then after he left, they carried on. That makes sense? So the system has been used by others, but this what they're talking about, no one's ever used it. You know, they say, well, Prabhupada's different. No, Prabhupada does everything according to the Shastra, that Krishna. That's one of his 64 qualities. He acts according to the scripture. So why would the Acharya do something different? Like that. 422. That man who truthfully fills both his ears with the Veda, the pupil shall consider as his father and mother. He must never offend him. Briti, this verse is referring to the Acharya, one who gives the Veda, because you remember he gives the Veda, and someone else is giving a portion of the Veda. So it's a specific study, you know, a specialized study. Like that. The teacher is 10 times more venerable than a sub-teacher, Upadhyaya. Okay. The father is 100 times more than the teacher, but the mother 1,000 times more than the father. Okay. The statement that the father is 100 times more venerable than the teacher refers to a teacher not acquainted with transcendence and simply teaching material duties. Right? Because this will come up. So they're talking about the sub-teacher here. Such a person is less venerable than both the father and mother. Right? So an upadhyaya is always less venerable than the mother and father. Because you're going to him for that, and then you go back. The parents are the one taking responsibility. Because your English teacher doesn't take responsibility for your life. Right? Like that. The rule is prominent amongst those who follow the path of karma kanda. As stated in the previous and subsequent verses, that teacher who gives one the Veda is considered the most respectable. Of him who gives natural birth and of him who gives the knowledge of the Veda, the giver of the Veda is the more venerable father. For the birth for the sake of the Veda ensures eternal rewards both in this life and after death. Right? Birth for the sake of the Veda means initiation. Right? So then that's where it reverses. So, in other words, when it comes down, because the parents choose what teachers, you know, their children will learn from. But those who are giving that, what it talks about in the first one, then that is more venerable. They call that Brahman who initiates a pupil and teaches them the Veda together with Kalpa Rahasa is the preceptor, Acharya of the latter. Let him consider that he received a mere animal existence when his parents begat him through mutual affection, and when he was born from the womb of his mother. But that birth which a teacher acquainted with the whole Veda, in accordance with the law, right? So then we're not talking about a sub-teacher here. Accordance with the law, right? So that means how to apply it. A pure procures for him through the Savitri is real, exempt from age and death. Means the birth you get from your mother and father, you will die from that. You know, it's actually terminal, right? You know, but this one is not; it's eternal. Does that make sense? Like that. The pupil must know that man also who benefits him by instruction in the Veda, be it little or much, is called in these institutes as guru. In consequence of that benefit conferred by instruction in the Veda. So even if he just gets something from some person, but if it's Veda, you know, in other words, it's the Shastra, you know, we're getting absolute truth, then he is to respect that person. So that means any senior person, any preacher, anybody who is somehow or another progressing your life in Krishna consciousness is to be respected. The Brahmana who is the giver of the birth for the sake of the Veda and teaches the prescribed duties, right? Means so he teaches you the Veda and how to apply them in your life. So what would be your duties and all that? In other words, he's teaching you the Veda and the lifestyle that goes with the Veda. Because the other ones just teach the knowledge, not the lifestyle. So one who gives the knowledge and the lifestyle, right, becomes by law the father of an aged man, even though he himself be a child. Right? Okay, here's the explanation that we were talking about before. Young Kavi, the son of Angiras, right, so Ingira Muni, right, taught his relatives who were old enough to be fathers, and as he excelled them in sacred knowledge, he called them little sons. Moved with resentment, they asked the gods concerning the matter, and the gods having assembled answered, "The child has addressed you properly. For a man destitute of sacred knowledge is indeed a child, and he who teaches him the Veda is his father. For the sages have always said child to an ignorant man and father to a teacher of the Veda. Neither through years, nor through white hairs, nor through wealth, nor through powerful kinsmen comes greatness." Notice here what we just went through. Right before we went through all the different levels, aspects of respect. The sages have made this law. He who has learnt the Veda together with the Angas, Anuchana, is considered great by us. Right? So that means you know the Veda, and you know the Anuchana, you know the branches of application. Right? Vritti. Anuchana refers to one who, having studied an authorized matter, has gained a complete understanding. Right? So that's the idea of this course, you know. But, you know, how you say, teaching it in a scheduled manner, that we'll have to see. So we don't have no idea how long it'll take. Like that, we just know we're going through all the matter that is the standard study, right? It means nowadays in Gurukuls you won't see it. But if you go back and what the Shastras talk about, what Krishna Balaram studied, and what Chanakya talks about, and others, then you see, you know, Narad Muni, what he studied, what you know, other great authorities, then that is what is called Anuchana. You study, you know Vedanta with the other branches of Vedic knowledge. That together is that. Right? So that's what this course is about, right? Okay. Basis of seniority. The seniority of Brahmins is from sacred knowledge, and that of Kshatriyas from valor, that of Vaishyas from wealth and grain and other goods, but that of Shudras alone from age. Yeah. So it means you have something valuable. So you would say that you have nowadays persons, they have stocks and other things. So in one sense, they are Vaishyas, they are wealthy. But technically, because it's not actually grain, or it's not actually something of substance, it's simply floating around in some computer software. So as long as everybody is cool with that computer software, you're rich. But if something happens to the market, you don't have anything. You know what I'm saying? So it's even there, it's not really a solid... Unless you're trading in commodities, you know, then yes, you know, there will be, you know, 5,000 tons of corn will end up on your front doorstep if you don't sell it. Like that. So, you know, that would be more safe. But if you're dealing in stocks of, you know, Michael Jackson, you know, you may be making money, but, you know, it would be hard to say this is a solid businessman.
Right? What about gold and gemstones? And
it's that great, and other goods. I mean, it's something of value.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? But I have a computer printout that says I'm rich.
Yeah.
But rich in what? Rich in things that people have attributed it's worth this much. But as soon as something goes wrong in the market, you know, it's like the... You know, the head of the Reserve Bank, or, you know, the who's the guy? Greenspan was, you know, he's in charge of the finance for like America. He's the advisor for that, or some other, like, you know, Microsoft makes an announcement or something that is not seen as good in the market. Bang, everything just drops. So it's just all in people's minds. You know what I'm saying? You have all these pieces of paper. So as long as everybody agrees that the paper is of value, you're good to go. But as soon as something happens, then, you know what I'm saying? Like this guy has a wheelbarrow full of bread. And this guy has a wheelbarrow full of, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. There's no food. There's nothing around. Who's wealthy?
That would be the argument that some people, they say that actually even gold doesn't have a value.
Gold, they say gold, but gold always has a value.
Yeah.
Because even in like the Congo, where there is, you know, they have money, but the locals trade in gems and gold.
Yeah.
Because they figure that's real, because the other stuff's not.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Gold always has, because God said it has a value. You know, they'll say, oh, it's this and that. But the point is it goes back to a gold standard. Who has gold has a solid economy. Who sells the gold, they have a problem. Right? Because you can say Australia, you know, a couple of years ago sold tons and tons and tons of gold. But they produce gold, so they're not really at a loss. But they sold it. But what does that mean? Somebody bought it. You know, it's not that the little grandmother bought some new earrings and then that was it for the Australian gold. someone is buying those tons. You know, the little guy in Bangkok with his little shop is not going to, yeah, I'll take a ton, you know. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like that, you know. 1 kilo, it's about this big, about that thick, and that'll be 22 lakhs of rupees. That one little piece of, like that. And that's 1,000th of a ton. You know what I'm saying? So a ton is a lot of gold. You know what I'm saying? So it has value, whether people say or not. But the point is, in other words, see, the point is being made is that your wealth is invested in something of value. So you have land, or you have buildings, or you have something. then you can say. Because otherwise, if the guy has nothing and he just has a paper, you can say yes technically, but it's like you tell him because he has a nice house, he has a nice car, he dresses well, like that, then you can say that he's wealthy. Does that make sense? So in other words, it's when it's applied. That's the point. Like, the knowledge is good, but when the knowledge is applied, that teacher is more respectable than one who doesn't. So it says, Signor de Braj is from sacred knowledge. But then even of sacred knowledge, who applies it? And of who applies it, who realizes it? Right? Who realizes it, who's a devotee? Right? So devotees are the top tier. Kshatriya is from valor, Vaishya is from wealth and grade, but that of Shudras alone from age. So to simply consider that you're senior because of age, that's a Shudra consideration. Valid, but a Shudra consideration, yes.
Can you measure some kind of personal quality like stability or hardworking for Shudra? It seems like age is just...
No, I mean, it's another thing, but age is the thing, because the point is how do you become good at an art?
Keep doing it.
You keep doing it. So if someone has been doing it for 50 years, or someone doing it for 10 years, who's better at it?
50 years.
Yeah, so that's the point. That's why then Shudras who have been doing it longer is more respectable. You know, it's just like, let's say even you have actors, okay? Somebody was there, a nobody, and somehow or another he was just at the right place at the right time and then got a good part and, you know, it went well. So he'll be a celebrity. But amongst the other actors, he's not considered that solid of an actor because overnight he came up, overnight he could disappear. But the ones that went through and they worked their way up, they spent the time in the little side theaters and nightclubs and this and that. But now they're big, then they're considered, they've paid the dues because it's time, it's age. Right? You know, does that make sense? Unless it's such exceptional acting ability. You know what I'm saying? Mm. Then we know that's just from previous life.
Mm.
But we're not talking about being famous or that. We're talking about actually having an ability. Mm. You know, you have these... I think Mozart at 6 was, you know, the official, you know, music person for the Queen. You know, like he could, you know, write things and do things. So he was actually able to do it. So then...
His ability would also be time in the last life.
Yeah, means of course. I mean, it's like I think Prabhupada mentioned, I think it was Ravi Shankar. He'd been playing sitar for 1,000 lifetimes. You know, and he only knew 1/4 of what his teacher knew. Right? His wife knew actually 60%. He was way better, but because of just attrition, she stayed out of the way. His brother-in-law knew 50%. So he was so, you know, quite good, but he only knew 25%. And that's 1,000 lifetimes, so you can imagine how many lifetimes were the other ones, you know. So that's the thing, you want to become good at some mundane thing, it takes a while.
Also, I've seen that some people, they can be good at many things. That's something they've been doing for many lives.
Yeah, that'll be, yeah. Just in any case, if someone's good at something, they've been doing it for a longer time. But the point is that you're looking for these as the point. Because the thing is that background at it, but still, they're practicing. You know, that Ravi Shankar and that ilk, the North Indians, musicians, they practice 10 to 12 hours a day. That's just standard. They don't practice less. You know. So they're putting in their time also. Does that make sense? You know, so it's there. But it's to be able to do something special with it, something inspired, then that means there's more lifetimes behind it.
One question was regarding stock market.
Regarding stock market.
Is the investment in stock market...
Is investment in stock market gambling? Do you know what you're doing, or do you not know what you're doing? Do you know the science of the market?
No, it's like he's not certain.
No. Let's say it's festival, right? Devotees are coming, lots of devotees. So you decide to go somewhere and, you know, in India, invest in a bunch of something and set up a little shop in the mini market. Can you guarantee it will be sold? So, is it gambling? You know, they decide, okay, all the devotees are coming today, we'll cook, you know, 20 extra trays of pizza. So is that gambling? You understand? If you know that, yes, normally there's this much, we sell this many trays, and there's this many devotees, right? And now there's going to be 10 times that many devotees, so we can make 10 times that amount of trays, right? Why? Why can they say that?
From experience,
yeah, because they know devotees like they're like their snack in the morning, right? So then it'll work. you know what I'm saying?
So it's called business.
It's business. I mean, there's always a risk, but it's where you're willing to take a risk. Point is it's an educated risk. You know, just like the king, he goes out on the battlefield. Is he going to win? Guaranteed, is it going 100% he's going to win? So then is it gambling? No, but he knows the science how he could win, but it's just a matter of applying it. So when you know the science of dealing with the market, it's not gambling. So your technical traders are not gambling. But the other guys that just read in the business magazine, hey, this is a good stock and all that, and they go out and invest in it, they're gambling. Do you understand? Why? Because the guys that are technical, they're selling at that time. That's why these guys can buy. And then they bought it all, and now nobody wants it. And now then the shares drop. So the technical guys know that. The other guys don't. You understand? I think the techies are like, forget what it is, something like 7 or 5 or 2 or something percent of the market. So you could say most people are gambling on the stock market. They're the ones who that is their business. And then brokers, that's just straight business. Just like the person who runs the gambling casino is not gambling at all. It's just straight business. Bad business, but business. But the guy who comes to his place, he's gambling. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, if you're a technical trader, it's not. But if you're not a technical trader, then I wouldn't get involved. Yes?
What if you know the science of playing poker?
The science of playing poker. Yeah, it's just bad money.
Yeah. But it could be counted as business.
Could be, but you don't look like Brad Pitt.
I'm not talking about from you.
Oh, okay.
Of course.
What do you mean I don't look like that? Technically, yeah, but at the same time, it's a very high risk business. Do you know what I'm saying? If you want to put it, but how many people are like that? No. You know, there's a few in the world. You know, they have these high stake. Okay? You only have 5 or 10 people come in the whole world, and there's a lot of people playing poker. Or in Vegas, it's also a small amount. Yeah. And even those who they know are on that level, they won't let them play. So they only actually want gamblers to play. They don't want to act people who really know it to play. You know what I'm saying? In other words, in the casino, if you know what you're doing, they consider you're cheating. That's the fun part. So they kick you out. Yeah. Okay. A man is not therefore considered venerable because his head is gray. In other words, by art, yes, it will be gray because you've practiced. Mm. Right? But that's your occupation. You know? And there's more to that. Him who, though young, has learned the Veda, the gods consider to be venerable. Right? Because you may be good at an art, but if you don't know Krishna consciousness, what does it matter? It's just like, let us say you know something. Like, you know, so it's like we're always impressed, you know, with these, you know, the old, how you say, you know, these, like based on a few thousand year old, you know, Chinese martial arts, like that. You know, it's like they set it back a few thousand years. They're bouncing off the wall, they're flying in the space, they're doing all that, right? And we're so impressed. Every monkey in Vrindavan can do all of that. Like that. You know, they were born doing it. They were born to, you know, jump off walls and stuff, right? You know what I'm saying? So the point is it's still just animal stuff. Very amazing what they can do. You know, the guy is sitting there, he can lift 9,000 kilos, 100 kilos and all that. The elephant can do that. That elephant over there can do it. You know, so there's the animals can do all the things that people do with such amazing talent. The animals can do better. Does that make sense? So the idea is that if you don't connect it to the Lord through the Shastra, then, you know, then it's simply, okay, who's the older animal? Then he's respected. You know, it's just like the dog. Who's the bigger, older dog? He's more respected than the younger one. Does that make sense? As an elephant made of wood, an antelope made of leather, such as an unlearned Brahmin, whose those three have nothing but the names of their kind. Right? As a eunuch is unproductive with women, as a cow with a cow is unprolific, and as a gift made to an ignorant man yields no reward, even so is a Brahmin useless who does not know the riks. Right? Because an ignorant man, you don't get a reward. You only get back how much you gave. You gave the beggar 10 rupees, in the future you'll get back 10 rupees. Mm. So there's no reward. You know what I'm saying? You're not making any profit. Does that make sense? Yeah. The riks mean the Veda. Means that's the verses. Thus a Brahmana does not know Veda is actually no Brahmana. Right? So for us, means knowing the Veda means the actual purpose of the Veda. Means Vedanta. Mm. So for us, that will mean, you know, Bhagavad. Gentle speech. Created beings must be instructed in what concerns their welfare without giving them pain. And sweet and gentle speech must be used by a teacher who desires to abide by the sacred law. He, forsooth, whose speech and thoughts are pure and ever perfectly guarded, gains the whole reward, which is conferred by the Vedanta. Right? Because all the living entities are parts and parcels of Krishna, so you want to be nice. It doesn't mean that you're not direct or honest. It just means you're not trying to be emotionally callous or harsh. Mm. You know what I'm saying? You get an argument that may come up.
Could we say that when Srila Prabhupada, for example, was very hard, that was his kindness because he was actually caring very much for the disciple?
Yes, but the point is it's very, it's not emotionally. It's like the person is being stupid. What does he say? He says, try to understand, you know, and if by saying something strong, it'll wake them up and they'll listen, right? And there's also the point is that there's nothing that Prabhupada said?
What would not eat?
Oh, no, that's another thing. But that a child can't say or an old man can't do. Right? So, you know, sometimes Prabhupada would do things and the devotees think, wow, hey, you know, Prabhupada says, no, you can't do that. You know, people won't respect it. Right, so the Vedanta, the point is Vedanta gives you God consciousness. But the point is Krishna's pleased when we also deal with all his parts and parcels properly. Right, because we can't say we're a devotee of Krishna and not deal with his parts and parcels properly. Right, so that's why etiquette and all these things are there. So we start to, right, because you know the philosophy, but unless you apply it and you're able to deal with others properly, how do you know that you know Vedanta? Mm. Right. One's speech is to be ever perfectly guarded. This indicates that nothing should be spoken without careful consideration. Right, so Prabhupada would speak it; it would get the results. Right, you always see in Prabhupada speaks out. You know, he says something, you know, pleasantly. And then somebody else says something, you know, crazy, you know, based on that. Prabhupada again reiterates. You know, then again they keep on going the crazy stuff. And again Prabhupada makes a statement, this time stronger. And then the whole rest of the conversation, the whole rest of the page in the BTG is just Prabhupada talking. So it worked. You know what I'm saying? And these people think, oh, well, you know, this and that, or wasn't such strong. Those people, when devotees would talk to them, they would argue for hours and never come to an end. But Prabhupada would shut them up in three points, you know. And they would listen. Like that. Let him not, even though in pain, speak words cutting others to the quick. Let him not injure others in thought or deed. Let him not utter speeches which makes others afraid of him, since that will prevent him from gaining heaven. Right? So here then, in this, heaven means those who are dealing with... I see. Felt something on my toe, and then something flew away, and then very close there was one of these jumping spiders.
Oh.
So I thought, well, is it the spider? No, he was going to catch whatever was biting my toe.
So, there's a whole
scene
going on
in the whole jungle. Yeah. So heaven, it means, you know, so for the Karmakandi, that will mean the heavenly planets, you know, because it's impious. For the Brahmavadis, that will mean Brahman. And for the devotees, it means Vaikuntha. You know. In other words, you're not going to situate yourself in your goal if you're rough with others. Yes.
So that's the point, right?
Yeah. Because as we said before, as we see, the wording that's used are used for the particular audience. Now, the devotees read this and see Daiva Varnashram. Right? The jnanis see it, and those portions that apply to them, the culture they take, but those portions that apply to them for renunciation, they follow that, and the rest of it they don't have to worry about, except for if they're giving advice for that. But the Karmakandis, and most of it is. So in prominence, you want to use the language of the karmas, though the jnani element is thrown in. You know what I'm saying? Because they are also reading, but not as much. But they also give advice, so then they would need to know it. But the language generally uses, is that sense?
And that also means that the one who is following transcendence, he would recognize already.
He would recognize, yeah. So that's the point, is that you know the synonyms, like that. Means, you know, smarta means he just takes it, just the word, or the grammar, like that. But here, it's no. You have to know what they're talking about. Equanimity of mind. A Brahmin, so now this is all the different things, is that the Brahmin must know the Veda and be able to practice it. Right? And then he must be, you know, proper in his speech. Right? Because you have body, mind, and words. Right? So words means then there's, it means the knowledge, and it's your intelligence, and how you use it, how you speak it. Right? Now, here, equanimity of mind. Now we're dealing with that. So, along with that, that's going to happen with someone who's like this. A Brahmin should always fear homage as if it were poison, and constantly desire to suffer scorn as he would long for nectar. For he who is scorned, nevertheless, may sleep with an easy mind, awake with an easy mind, and with an easy mind walk here among men, but the scorner utterly perishes. Right? The person who's been scorned, it's only words. But the person who has scorned him, he'll be destroyed. And that's just the way it works. So therefore, it's not. If you criticize someone, the quality of that person that you criticize, though they may have a quality that you don't consider or may not be considered proper, but by you criticizing them, right? Because you're that criticism, that on their part means it's a bad reaction, right? Does that make sense? Right, you're putting them in a situation that's uncomfortable for them because you're speaking badly about them. Right? So, what do bad situations do for you as far as they purify? Right? Right? So, by you scorning the other person, you're purifying it. Right? But, we understand when you're dealing with the material, if the impurity leaves him, where does it have to go? It goes to you. So that's why you see the person who's always criticizing, with time, develops the same qualities as the person they criticize. It's only by that. You know.
Rinpoche, you have a saying, I have to pay my tongue.
Pay my tongue.
Yeah, so you spoke something, and immediately the situation happens to you.
So. Yeah, yeah. So you have to pay for yeah.
what you said.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the... So that's why it's not a problem. But homage, you might become proud and then not do it properly and everything like that. Study of the Veda is the highest austerity. That twice for a man who has been sanctified by the employment of the means described above in due order. Right. So in other words, these order, you have to, you know, respect the authority, follow you know, your duties and all that, control the senses. right? Does that make sense? You know, then speak properly, mind be peaceful. So in like this, this is how it'll work. Right? In other words, if you speak properly, you can control the mind, right? Because that's what Rupa Goswami says. The tongue, you know, then the mind, and then anger. So if you control the tongue, the mind doesn't become disturbed, there's no anger.
Mm.
Right?
Mm.
So it's the same. You understand? So it's saying the same thing, but it's using the language and examples of the social system. But it's not speaking anything different than the Gita is. This Gita is directly paravidya. Right? Well, this is aparavidya because you're using that particular medium to explain transcendence. Right? So the medium used, it's called by that kind of scripture. Does that make sense? Yeah. A twice born man has been sanctified by the employment of the means described above in due order, shall gradually and cumulatively perform the various austerities prescribed for those who study the Veda. Yeah, so gradually and then naturally it'll build. It's not that you go through one and then the next, but it's you start with A, and then when you move to B, now you're doing A and B. Then when you move to C, you're doing A, B, and C. Not that you do A, and then when you move to B, you're not doing A anymore. Right? You know? Yeah, I was you know, when I started, I was chanting my rounds and all that, and you know, like that. And so now that, you know, I moved into the temple and now we're getting up early, so now I'm not chanting the rounds, now I'm living in the temple. Right? And then, you know, from living in the temple, now going out, now we're preaching. So now we don't live in the temple or chant our rounds. You know, it's not like that. No, you add. Does that make sense? So that's why it uses cumulatively. You know, it builds up.
Yeah.
And so this is, means 270 to 163 means those are what we mean. This is the lifestyle, twice born man. So that means Brahmin, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas. There's not a separate culture for Kshatriyas and Vaishyas. Right? There's only the Brahminical culture. That's all there is. Right? The Shudra does his best. How much he can follow it, great. And how much he doesn't, no one's disturbed. Yes.
Couldn't we say the same for the Brahman?
Meaning
there are so many injunctions in the Vedas that can he follow?
No, but the injunctions are to cover everybody and everything.
Yeah.
So what applies to him, he follows what applies to him. Right? You know what I'm saying? But the lifestyle, there's one lifestyle.
Yeah.
There's different occupations, but there's only one lifestyle. Does that make sense? An Aryan must study the whole Veda together with the Rahasyas, performing at the same time various kinds of austerities and the vows prescribed by the rules of the Veda. Let a Brahmana who desires to perform austerities constantly repeat the Veda. For the study of the Veda is declared to be in this world the highest austerity for a Brahmana. Right? So it means you're supposed to study the Veda and perform those austerities that go along with what your prescribed duties. But now it's saying, for the Brahmana who's performing austerities, the greatest, let's say he wants to be austere and really do something solid, the greatest austerity is to study the Veda. Yeah, here, this is a fun one. Verily, that twice born man performs the greatest austerity up to the extremities of his nails. It means up to the tips of his nails. It's that austere. Right? Who, though wearing a garland, daily recites the Veda in private to the utmost of his ability. That's actually the greatest austerity. Right? So the study of Shastra like that means, you know, you're sitting here like that. That's the greatest austerity. Like that. Then, after that, is all the other austerities that, you know, go with your particular varna or ashram. But still, the study of transcendental knowledge is considered for a twice-born man to be the real austerity, right? And that was Prabhupada's complaint, right? Is that he says the only complaint he has about his disciples, they don't read his books. Right? Yes.
What is the meaning of though wearing a garland,
because he may be having a garland, nice situation, it may be very comfortable, but if he's studying the Shastra, that's real austerity. Not that he has to be there and, you know, nothing's there, bare floor, freezing cold, you know, nothing to wear, you know, flies around, mosquitoes at the same time, if you can arrange it, you know, like that, gritting his teeth, you know, ate a chunk of wood for breakfast, you know, that's, you know, austere, you know. Oh, I forgot, tattoo. Yeah, a tattoo. Those are austere. Tattoos are austere, right? From what I understand, because the rule is, the law is, you can't have any. There can't be any anesthetic. It means this, it means if you can bear the pain, you get a tattoo. You can't bear the pain, you don't get a tattoo. Because otherwise, people would have a million tattoos.
I knew one guy once. He had a half a tattoo.
It was a big tattoo or small?
Yeah, it was all over his arm, but it never really cut.
Yeah, well, he wish it had gone for a smaller one. Yeah. That was complete. That's why you see some of these girls have these little dinky ones.
Yeah.
You know, like that. Okay, Yajnavalkya states, a twice-born person who daily studies the Vedas reaps the fruits of giving away thrice the earth full of riches, as well as those of the best ascetic observances. Right? Thrice the earth full of riches. That means the whole planet. You know, he gets the benefit of that and the best ascetic observances. You know, standing on your toes in talasana, that seems like a very popular one, right? So, you know, you get the benefit of all those big, big austerities. You know talasana? You stand on your toes, you know, straight, with your hands straight up in the air with your hands out like that, like a paltry.
Yeah, okay. So that's,
you know, like when you walk in, when you just turn into the Gurukul, just in the corner there's a paltry. You know, it's a palm tree and it's got those leaves that look like that. That's a paltry. So talasana means you just stand there like that. So when people are being really austere, they use that one.
Like Hiranyakashipu
used that one.
Okay. Two times Prabhupada established the sandwich program, Bhagavatam and Gita, so he was referring to this.
Yeah. That, the whole point is that always regular reading, then there is so much benefit.
So Hiranyakashipu, he should have studied instead.
Yeah, he would have gotten more if he had studied the Vedanta. Yeah, he probably would have. Like that. But it wouldn't have been as fun.
No,
it wouldn't have been as fun at all.
One song less at the Mangalarati.
Yeah. The twice born, in other words, whatever you're looking for, you get from studying Prabhupada's books. You know, studying the Veda. That's the thing. So Prabhupada's saying, you know, we should read. It wasn't just, you know, because he wrote the books and I wrote these books and I was reading them. You know, it's like it's a matter of that the benefit you get. Is also, you know, so if you gave away thrice the earth full of riches, even if you just gave it away to beggars, what would you get back?
The same.
The same. You know, so devotees are looking for money. Read! You know? Stuff like that.
Good propaganda. Let's make a board. Make it hard for me.
Bringing
up for the next strategic planning meeting.
Yeah, okay. You can try. Yeah, I don't think it'll do very well. A twice-born man who, not having studied the Veda, applies himself to other and worldly studies, soon falls, even while living, to the condition of a Shudra and his descendants after him. So, twice-born person. He has to study the Veda, right? Then he can take up all these other kinds of study. But if he just applies himself to all these other kinds of study and doesn't apply himself to the Veda, then he'll drop to the level of a Shudra. Right? Is that what it sounds like? So it's dangerous. So that is what one should study. Riti. Persons are considered who have not studied the Veda who have not studied the essential scriptures of the Sampradaya. Right, so if you're studying Gita, Bhagavatam, Nectar Devotion, you know, this Krishna book, then you're studying the Veda. So as long as any devotee is doing that, then their development of other skills and knowledge is fine. But if they don't have time for that because they're so busy, you know, making money or taking care of worldly important things, then one falls to the status of a Shudra. Now, if you're a Malecha Yavana, That would be actually a step up.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, first, second, and third birth. Because Prabhupada talks about this. I'm not sure if he has a quote on that. According to the injunction of the revealed text, the first birth of an Aryan is from his natural mother. The second happens on the tying of the girdle of Munja grass. And the third on the initiation to the performance of the Shrauta sacrifice. Vritti on the tying of the girdle of Munja grass refers to the samsara of Upanayana. Right, so that's why I mentioned before, there's those who have are initiated into the Shrauta. So they're Twija. Right? You have the first birth, then you have Dwija, second birth, then you have Twija. So technically, we're Twija. Because you have the birth from the parents, then there's Upanayanam, right? Then there's the Pancharatra.
With the Gayatri, the second
ministry. With the Pancharatra Gayatri. Okay. Right, because the Pancharatrik is a higher level of ritual. Mm-hmm. Just like the Shrauta Yagyas are a higher level of ritual than the general. Like that. So Pancharatra is the essential. It's Ekayana, it's Vedic, but it's the higher level. Because it's only on Vishnu. So then one's Puja.
Maharaj, those devotees who belongs to the Brahmin family in India...
Who belongs to, okay.
Because in India they get Janeya samskar, like after in the age of 6, when they are coming to ISKCON, again they have to go to the Brahmin samskar?
Technically no, but devotees don't know that, so generally they end up like that. They tell them, oh, you can't chant, you're not a Brahmin, are you? Like that. So then you don't. But it's supposed to be if they already have it, and they're chanting it, they should continue chanting it. But still, it's the process is not complete till you get the Pancharatrika initiation, because that's spiritual. That's why it's called Upanayana, to bring near. It's not actually, you know, the actual point is the knowledge gained from the spiritual master. Does that make sense? That's why the element of the rahasyas and all that is you have to learn the shastra, and then, you know, rahasyas means Vedanta, right? The hidden meaning. You know? And then how to apply that into your life. That makes sense. You know, the technical knowledge. Upanayanam is the first line, the first Gayatri. Harinam, that's Bhagavad. We're using a combination anyway of those three, but that's first. First is the combination of the Bhagavad, and that you're taking up the chanting, and that of the first three samskars of Pancha Samskar. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur split the second initiation into two parts. The first three, which is the neck beads, the tilak, and getting a name of Krishna as first, and then getting the Gayatri mantras and worshipping of the deity as fourth and fifth as the second initiation. Right? Because you were going out and preaching and catching devotees from a wider range. But before is, you know, the devotee would be there, he'd be doing his sadhana, and then somebody who was interested in knowing about the Vaishnava tradition would go and find him. So when he, you know, was around the ashram through the Purvascharya Vidhi, then when he got initiation, he got what we'd call first and second at one time, because it's all one samskara. The Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur for preaching split it into two parts. So we call first initiation is the first part of second initiation. It's not two different initiations. Right? So but with that, first we're getting technically the Bhagavad's already started, but you know, then it makes it official. Because you're already chanting before that, but now you've made that commitment. Is that a sense? So we're using all three. Among those three, the birth which is symbolized by the investiture with the girdle of Munja grass is birth for the sake of the Veda. They declare that in that birth, the Savitri verse is his mother and the teacher is his father. Right? So then you're doing that, and Prabhupada would say, the Veda is the mother, the Guru is the father. Right? Priti, one is unauthorized to perform sacred rites before being duly initiated. I'm not sure how that comes into here.
Or the second birth of Panana. I think we jumped.
Yeah, there is a paragraph.
Yes. At the second birth, Upanayanam, the Brahma Gayatri is the mother and the spiritual master is the father.
Oh, okay. They call the teacher, the pupil's father, because it gives the Veda, for nobody can perform a sacred rite before the investiture with the girdle of munja grass. Okay, so now it makes sense. Right, so he's the father. So that's why it means, I don't think it comes up here. I think it'll come up later when we get into the Grihastha Ashram. But it'll mention that the mother, the father, and the teacher, then that one has respect for them throughout the life. Right? This modern idea is only mother and father, and that's as long as they're together, because if it's not, then whichever one you happen to end up with, whoever was, you know, had a better facility, better at fighting, then you respect them, and they're hoping you don't respect anybody else. Right? But it's mother, father, and the teacher. Right, because the mother and father, you know, they gave birth, they took care, you know, they had that affection. But the teacher is giving you actual birth into the Veda. So that's a more important birth. So these three together are once, how you say, you know, the standard direction in life, how you do things and everything like that.
Thinking this, that I'm getting, I have first initiation and then guru goes, and if I want to have second initiation, then what's the position of that person who gives me second initiation? What's that? That's the position.
He's the one. Means you worship the deity through that person who gives the second.
But still, basically, I'm the disciple of that first one.
That, but he also a disciple of the second.
Okay,
you know, it means it's both together, but technically it depends upon how it goes. If the first one is not functioning, then technically the first one is the preliminaries for the second.
Like in my case, our case.
Yeah, but if it's somebody, let's say they died, you know, so they're not there, then the second is only carrying on what was started by the first. You know what I'm saying? So it just depends upon the situation, which one is the prominent of the two.
Yeah.
You know, both are respected, but it's just a matter of which one's the prominent. Right? Does that make sense? So in this case, it would be the second.
Okay. Yeah. So that would be coming now prominent then?
Yeah, that would be the prominent.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Well, if the case of the devotee, let's say he had first and second initiation, and this person left.
The person left, or the guru left.
The guru left.
The person and the guru left.
The problem solved.
Yeah, don't worry.
Okay, both left together.
Yeah, they opened the business.
To worship the deity, this devotee still uses the photo of that guru.
Does he still use the photo of that guru? Depends if he left or died. If he died, yes. If he left, then generally one would choose, depending upon the position you want, would generally choose a Siksha Guru and use their picture. Like that. But the connection is not lost. Mm-hmm. It's just that it's in other words, whose instructions are keeping that initiation alive, that's the one for your pictures you generally use.
Could be Prabhupada use Prabhupada's picture?
Can, but the point is there's others who are you're taking advantage of. If not, then why not? Why don't you have other devotees that you find that are senior and inspired? It means you can if you want, but it's this thing where they say, no, it's only Prabhupada. It's all nonsense. The natural form is just, it can be, but it shouldn't be made into a trip because, you know, what's their right? Now suddenly there, because their guru fell down, now they're on the same level as Prabhupada's own initiated disciples. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't work like that. Because your father died, now you're on the level with your grandfather. Hey. You know, it's not like that. We're talking, you know, real relationships here. We're not talking Western mental speculation. You know, my false ego can't handle being on any lower level or being in a compromised position. you know, philosophy. We're talking, you know, relationships. It's just the way it is. You understand? So, as far as Siksha goes, Prabhupada is the prominent Siksha, the Adi Guru. Everyone is a disciple of Prabhupada. But as far as the Diksha line goes, you have your line. You're not a Diksha disciple of Prabhupada. You're in his line, but you're not a Diksha disciple of his. So if you're, as the Adi Guru from Siksha side, you're worshipping Prabhupada, that's fine. But if you're trying to say it's from Diksha side, it's like, you know, get real. You know, then it's the same thing. Why Prabhupada? Why not Bhaktivinoda? But Rupa Goswami, Hare Krishna. You know, everybody else and all the neophyte devotees are there, and they're all sitting down to do their ashram, and you pull out Rupa Goswami. there's going to be some, you know, hey, this trip is fine.
Would be first in the prasadam line.
Yeah. Everybody, it doesn't matter who it is, you know, all the senior men sit down, you come down and sit first. Hey, who's he? Hey, Rupa Goswami. You know, it's like, there could be advantages,
like,
here.
When you were a kid, we had these cars with like top speed and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You have like a chariot car.
So. Yeah, yeah, that's right.
So, if you take another person, a Siksha,
yeah, there's not a problem. Prabhupada should be there anyway, so it's not dramatic. It's just that maybe other pictures aren't there. So it's Prabhupada's supposed to be there anyway, because he's the Adi Guru. You know, just like someone who's a Sri Vaishnava, they'll have, if they're working with pictures, they'll have a picture of Ramanuja and their guru. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's been 1,200 years, but still, Ramanuja and their guru. So this mission goes for 10,000 years, so there'll always be Prabhupada's picture, and then their guru. Right? So many have Prabhupada, their guru, and then Siksha gurus. So they have, you know, a whole line out there. So if something happens with one, they have everybody else. You know what I'm saying?
So my doubt was, if he takes another Siksha, he doesn't take Diksha.
Not another Siksha. Means he should already have Siksha gurus.
Okay, so from those, he chooses one which is permanent?
Yeah.
Then he'll use his photo, right?
Yeah, that would be natural. Yeah. But at the same time, if he has a bunch of them, why not use all of their photos? You know, to put them in order. I know. But otherwise, yeah, if you make it simple, then his one. It works. That's the thing. The Diksha doesn't have to be redone.
Okay, yeah.
It's the Siksha that's important. What's lacking is the Siksha. That makes sense. Okay, so time is up. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shrila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainatai Gaurav. Okay, so here is the questions for chapter 1. Anybody who wants to get credit on this? Because this, as we were saying, the Anuchana, this is what, so what it is each one of these will be like a, I don't know what you say, but like a module of that. So you go through it. Like this is on Manu, you know, on Dharma Shastra. So that's one thing. And then the, you know, Artha will be there, Niti will be there, you know, Sanskrit. All these different things will be there. So each one will have its own degree. But when you have all of them, then that gets the Bhakti Anuchana. Like that. So if anybody wants to write the essays for this, then here is the. It'll be by chapter, you know, basically.